All right, welcome to Card Knock Life, episode 114. I'm Corey, and here's Daryl.
Yo.
It is a very Memorial Day episode here today. I just got done doing a bunch of yard work, Daryl. I'm all sweaty, so we're gonna avoid the Twitch today and keep it.
A memorial to our Twitch stream. Rest in peace.
just for the day.
Yeah.
But this will very much so be posted on the top of our website, which I don't know if I mentioned previously, but I should have. We have a new function on our website where the top of the homepage, you can just press play and stream the latest episode of Card Knock Life podcast, which I think is pretty slick. So it'll be up there. Maybe you're listening to us right there. If so, thanks for finding it.
Yeah, thanks for paying attention.
But let me say before we go on, we are sponsored by ManaTraders.com. Use the promo code CardKnockLife for 14% off your first 4 months at checkout. And some of the decks we're going to talk about today may entice you to at least give ManaTraders a shot, maybe even a month or so with that 14% discount. But there's a lot of cool stuff going on in Modern, and I think that a lot of the fears that we've had about the Modern format previously, maybe we need to kind of reassess. So I'd like to have that discussion, but before we do it, let's just talk about a couple of things. First of all, the Battleborn spoilers are all out.
Battle Bond.
I keep getting that confused. There's a video game called Battleborn, isn't there?
Yes.
So the Battle Bond spoilers are all out, I should say. And then also, I'd like to just talk about the latest Modern and maybe a little bit of the Standard results.
Sure.
But let's start with Battle Bond. There are a couple of Chase, Rare, and Mythic reprints in this set. Even some Uncommons. We've got Swords to Plowshares in this set, which is a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
But as far as reprints go, let's just cover those first of all.
Lots of good ones.
Yeah. Let's start with White. We're going to go in color order. Core Spirit Dancer is a needed reprint that's coming out now as a rare. Could have easily been a mythic rare. Core Spirit Dancer, obviously a big player in the Boggles decks. And that's about it.
Yep.
However, as a result of that, it's a big, it's got a pretty big price tag on it, or did.
Another big reprint for EDH that actually has a surprising price tag is Angelic Chorus.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Whenever a creature enters the battlefield under your control, you gain life equal to its toughness for 3 white.
Uh-huh.
Let's see if I can get that price data.
Yeah.
Yeah, get that price data for us here. So what's normal price? $6.50. Foils are $17, so looks like it's gonna drop. Take a significant.
Uh oh, Daryl, you're tatering.
What?
We lost you for a second there, Daryl. You okay?
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, there must have been a satellite passing by your house or something because you just cut out for a moment.
The government tapped into my computer. Angel of course, it's $6.50. So I mean, it's dropped
pretty
down
expensive.
Quite a bit.
Yeah.
Yeah, for a card that really is only going to see playing Commander, with only 2 printings, it's a nice reprint to bring that down.
Yeah, now Commander can have a big impact on price.
Yeah.
So, by the way, Core Spirit Dancer, previously about an $8 card. I can see that going pretty low. Land Tax is also being reprinted. Land Tax used to be like an uncommon, actually, when it was originally printed in Legends.
Yeah.
And is now a Mythic, so that's jumped 2 rarity slots, 2 rarity levels.
Yeah,
also,
but it's only been printed in, like, Legends and, like, 4th or 5th edition.
Yeah.
And then as a Judge promo. And so now we got what looks to be a mass reprint of Land Tax, which should hopefully tank the price for folks who want to get that for their Commander decks.
Yeah, this is the Judge promo art, isn't it? The Charger's
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's really cool art.
I don't like it. I like the old scraggly dude holding his bag, carrying his bag around.
Yep, I've got that one in Italian that I used to play in EDH. It's the Tassa Sulla Terra, which I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but that's how you say Land Tax in Italian, apparently.
I have a crappy white-bordered one from 4th edition, and I'm looking for a Legends one. Because I want that black border.
Okay, other notable white reprints, Mangara Thurandor, not a big deal, but that's an EDH player. That's the legendary human wizard, tap, exile it, and exile target permanent.
So that's much less good in EDH than it was in Legacy before actual good creatures got printed.
Yeah.
Because that was sort of that card was the reason why Death and Taxes got its name. Because you would just use like Wasteland or Schadenfort to lock your opponent's mana down, and then use Aether Vial, Mangara, and Caracas to exile all their permanents.
Yeah, so the trick with this one is the tap sign is on the left of the colon. Exile Mangara is on the right side of the colon, so you can tap it, target a permanent, and bounce it with your Caracas, and you do not have to exile
Mangara. And then violate it on the end of your opponent's turn so that it can tap as soon as it gets back to your turn when your Caracas untaps.
Yeah, now unfortunately Caracas isn't modern legal, but I could see that being played in modern at this point.
Yeah, as a one-off. I think just like between like Vile Flicker Wisp and Eldrazi Displacer, you can get a lot of mileage out of your Mangara front door if you really wanted to.
Now what you can do though is you can play the Champions of Kamigawa, that blue legendary land that untaps a legendary creature. That works, doesn't it? You can tap and then untap quickly and tap again. You can exile two permanents for the price of one Mangara.
You can, yes. Manamo is a play.
Yeah, Manamo is one.
I think we're more likely to see it paired with Eldrazi Displacer. To be a Debbie Downer.
Yeah, no, that's a good one too. Yeah, so it's not seeing play in taxes, but it certainly could be in modern if you want to get fancy. Okay, other reprints, I already mentioned Swords of Plowshares. That's the last one in white, but that's a big deal. An uncommon. This is certainly a powered up limited environment.
Yeah, it is.
Okay, let's jump to blue. Blue reprints.
Mystic Confluence. Nailed it.
Yeah, Mystic Confluence is a big one.
Yeah.
What was that at? That was pretty steep, wasn't it?
I was. Give me. Doing some on the fly research here. It's currently sitting at $10.
Oh, really? So, that's not too bad. So,
yeah, I mean, it's only got one printing.
Yeah.
My guess is it's probably dropped some. Like, the price trend is probably trending down.
Yeah.
Because for a while, Fiery Confluence is 15 now. Wasn't reprinted, but is, like, much, like, is currently market price $23.44. So, like, I think that Mystic is trending down and Fiery is going to trend up because it didn't get a reprint.
Yeah. I think, you know, and here's the shame about this is these cards are not being printed on Magic Online, which is where the price is really steep on those types, the Mystic Confluence and Fiery Confluence and whatnot.
Yep.
So that's true for a lot of the reprints in this set, in fact. So
yeah,
sadly, that will not be affecting the online market.
Yeah, it's a damn shame.
True Name Nemesis is a big example of that. I don't know how much that guy costs online, but he's not cheap. I know that.
He was like $100.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like $100.
But the treasure chests have brought him down slightly, I think. Is that
no.
No?
No. No, he's $100 because he's only printed in the treasure chest.
Oh, he is currently $100.
Yeah.
Oh my god, that's insane.
Let me check. At least he was when I last checked the price on them because I just had four sitting around that I traded to someone. $108 for a foil copy and $65 for a non-foil.
Wow. And what was he in paper? Do you know? He's like 35, right?
No, 25.
25, okay. So yeah. Not a huge reprint target.
Not a backbreaking reprint for. The problem is they're going to print it in foil, so the foil copies are going to be like $9,000 pretty much.
Yeah.
Because Legacy.
That's a good point.
Two other nice notable reprints. Sower of Temptation.
Mm-hmm.
So a $10 Lorwyn rare, only printed in Lorwyn. So nice to get another copy of that.
Yeah, absolutely.
And even though the card's not too expensive, the Tidespout Tyrant art.
Yeah, new art on that
top
guy.
Shelf.
Yeah,
top
very cool. It's very much in theme with the set, too. He's clearly, like, battling in an arena, which is a lot of fun.
Yeah, he is top shelf.
Also, you miss Spell Snare is another one, as an uncommon, getting reprinted.
Yeah.
It's a couple bucks.
That card. Yeah, a couple bucks.
So.
Just get some more Spell Snares out there.
Yeah. By the way, jumping to black next, Daryl, your card, Last Ditch Effort, also known as Moms Are Tough, is actually titled Stunning Reversal.
Yeah.
So I feel like we should acknowledge that.
Yeah.
And when you look at, and by the way, I'm on a tangent here entirely, Thrilling Encore, another card. It's a rare, 4 and a black, put onto the battlefield under your control all creature cards and all graveyards that were put there from the battlefield this turn. Hell of a fun card in EDH, but I just want to point out that is Ratchet and Clank in that picture, right? Without Clank on his back. You see the little dude walking with the big ears?
Oh, yeah, I got you. I know where you're at.
I love
me some Ratchet and Clank.
So EDH reprints are a thing. I think that's kind of like the MO of this set. There's a lot of cards that are probably priced pretty high because of EDH. Nirkana Revenant, I don't know if that really was a very steep card as far as price goes, but I wouldn't be surprised based on what it does. Specifically due to Commander. That's the
currently $21.
Okay, yep, so that's definitely a reprint target. Tap a swamp for mana, add an additional black, and he's basically a Nantuko Husk.
So the one you actually missed that most Shade. People are excited about is Diabolic Intent.
Oh, yeah, that is a good one, too. I forgot about that one, because it's also got new art, doesn't it?
Yeah, new art for the Diabolic Intent. But yeah, that's a legacy playable card.
Yeah.
And it just had a scarce supply, only printed once, so that card has got a nice little price tag, because it's so good in EDH as well.
Yeah, I dig the art on that one, by the way. It looks very much like the dude in Aladdin that's selling the goods at the beginning of the movie.
Yeah.
All right, jumping ahead, is there anything else in black? I don't think
so. No, that's it.
Black is really not all that exciting in this set.
Red, we got Chain Lightning.
Yeah.
And I'm not seeing much else that's Magmatic Force. That was a commander-only reprint.
Yeah, we've got a reprint of Bloodwear Intimidator. Certainly not an expensive card, but I think it's a ridiculously awesome flavor-wise card. Cowards can't block warriors. I love that.
So there's so many warriors in the set, it's actually relevant.
Why not?
So you just like spend all your red mana to make your guys unblockable. It's fantastic.
Yeah, War's Toll is probably worth something, too. That was an EDH card.
Yeah.
That's getting reprinted as a rare. Okay. All right, let's hit green real fast. Beast Within as an uncommon. That's the art from one of those Commander sets. Not surprised to see that.
Yeah, it's still a couple bucks just because Commander players love destroy permanents in green. Doubling Season, the obvious one. Yeah. We've spent a lot of time on that.
Yeah.
Elvish Legendary, a nice reprint. Not expensive, but nice to get your hands on.
Is this the first time that you can play this Elvish Visionary with the new border now? I think it might be.
Sure. No, it was printed in Origins.
It was. Okay.
Greater Good with the Judge art.
Uh-huh.
Magus of the Candelabra.
Yeah, I saw a lot of people in the finance community upset about that one because they spec'd on it originally. So, too bad, so sad.
Was it ridiculously priced?
I don't think so. I think they were expecting it to be, you know, one of those cards that goes up for some, you know, because some combo deck exists.
Well, first of all, no combo deck exists.
No, it doesn't yet.
It was 227, so thank God that card just didn't get spiked for no reason.
Yeah.
Then the last four cards listed on the page here, all pretty good. Seedborn Muse, Sky Shroud Claim, Veteran Explorer, and Bigger.
Yeah, new art for Veteran Explorer. That's a player in Nick Fit in Legacy, obviously. Vigor is certainly a card worth money due to EDH. That's a really fancy and like kind of an auto-include in a lot of green, like, go-wide creature decks.
Seedborn Muse is like a $25 card.
Yeah, that's another one.
Yeah. And Skytrout Claim is like $3, so...
Worth noting, Pulse of Murasa is getting reprinted as an uncommon. That's rarity shifting upwards, which is usually the opposite that we see in these types of sets. But that one is a big player in Pauper.
Pulse of Murasa is a little too good in Limited to be a common.
Yeah. Gold doesn't have anything too big.
Nope. Artifacts, big reprints. We got Mind's Eye and Mycosynth Lattice.
Yeah.
Big cards.
Yeah, Mycosynth Lattice, what's that worth?
What's like $20, I think. That card's like, only got one printing, and that's from Mirrodin.
Okay. I know Mind's Eye is worth something, too. So there's some value in the set. Genesis Chamber, possibly, as well. You know, sometimes that gets sees play in Norn's Sisters.
I'm still trying to spell Mycosynth.
M-Y.
They're two eyes. Hey, man. It's not a real word.
No, it's not.
Got it. All right. I can spell. That card is currently $30.
Oh, okay. So there you go. It is a mythic. No surprise there.
Yeah.
And by the way, Spectral Searchlight, I was talking about that one. I said I wouldn't be surprised to see that one in the set, and it is in the set.
Yeah, it's a nice little inclusion.
Yeah. I think I'm most excited about these basic lands. They're really cool. They all show a battlefield. In a different state, maybe it's the same battlefield. It kind of is like when you play Pokemon Stadium on N64 and it changes shape.
This literally just looks like the Hunger Games to me.
Yeah. It's like different terrains, different levels. It's pretty cool.
I love it. I love every bit of this.
Yeah.
I'm sad that the Battle Bond lands are only in Allied Killers.
Yeah. Yeah, those two are really neat, though. Yeah, I really love the Spire Garden art. I think that's so cool.
Yeah, I can dig it.
Um, All right, cool. So I don't think we need to get into too much of the set, like the original cards from the set, but there's one I want to talk about real fast because I don't know. I'm not a Legacy player, but it seems to me like this one might be worth a look.
I think I know which one you're going to name, so I'm going to scroll up.
Yeah, why don't you guess?
Put my cursor on it here since I can't remember the name of it. I call it by something else, and it's not the correct name, so let me.
All right, well, this one that I'm thinking of is a direct recreation of a Hearthstone card at a different mana cost. Last one standing is Brawl.
It's Brawl, yeah. That's not the card I thought you were thinking of.
Yeah, so tell me about this, Daryl. One black and red for a sorcery. Choose a creature at random, then destroy the rest. Three mana wrath. What do you think?
So is it better than Fiery Covenant for Legacy?
What is Fiery Covenant?
It's a one red-black sorcery. Pay X life. Deal X damage divided as you choose any number of creatures.
Yeah, that or the one that... Wait, what's the one that they all get minus X, minus X? That's a different one, too. What's that?
Toxic Deluge. Yeah, so, Fire Covenant is better than Toxic Deluge in decks that have creatures. Because you can kill your opponent's board and keep your own.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, that's kind of the draw to Fire Covenant. Is Fire Covenant better than this?
Yeah, it probably is. This one's a lot of fun, but I don't think it's nearly as competitive as those.
I don't think it makes the cut in Legacy.
Yeah.
There's one card I want to talk about that's just absolutely miserable. And by miserable, I mean a lot of people are going to hate it as soon as it gets printed. And that's Spellseeker.
Oh, I love that card. Yeah, so that's... Can you read the text on that one?
Sure. It's a 1/1 human wizard for 2 and a blue. When it enters the battlefield, search your library for an instant or sorcery card with CMC 2 or less. Reveal it, put it into your hand, and shuffle your library.
Yeah, that card is just like made for Legacy, isn't it?
So not really, because the problem is there aren't really that many good 2-mana sorceries, or 1 or 2-mana instant sorceries that you want to 2 or 4. Because the 3-mana up front is a little rough. So, This is pretty decent in Vintage, where you can go get stuff like Ancestral Recall and Time Walk.
Yeah, all those restricted cards.
But the thing that's going to make people want to bash their face in the table more than anything is that people are going to play this commander and look for Cyclonic Rift.
Oh, God, yeah.
So, like, you essentially get to play 2 Cyclonic Rifts, and, oh, by the way, you can search for a Demonic Tutor or a Biforce or a Pull from Tomorrow or a Disenchant or a Plow or, like, just nonsense. Mystical Tutor. This card is going to be miserable in Commander. And so, like, you put it into, like, blue-white blink deck that plays, like, 8 instants or sorceries that you can target with it. So there's not a lot of targets, but the key is, like, they now have the ability to have those important instants and sorceries on command, which just is just miserable. Like, the problem is, like, this card is the same color as Cyclonic Rift for EDH.
That's
all we got.
All right, I got one more then. How about this one? Arena Rector is basically the Academy Rector for Planeswalkers. 3 and a white for 1/2. When it dies, you search your library for a Planeswalker card, put it on the battlefield, and shuffle your library.
I was really disappointed when I saw this, because, like, why can't they just give us Academy Rector, you know?
Well, I don't know. It's kind of cool that we got another option now. Like, here's the thing. Nick Fit players, back to Nick Fit, you know, they already play the, what is the card called? Cranial Extraction? Or no, Surgical, oh my God. Cabal Therapy. Jesus Christ. Cabal Therapy has a flashback effect that says, sacrifice a creature. Yeah, Daryl? I'm sorry.
The struggle. You're having it.
Yeah,
real.
But I said the right name, didn't I?
Third time, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So it's 1 black for a sorcery. Choose a card name. Target player reveals their hand. You discard all of the cards of that name. And then the flashback, you sacrifice a creature. So that with Veteran Explorer gets you, like, a bunch of basic lands on early turns. Not a lot of Legacy decks play a bunch of basic lands. So you can ramp out things while your opponent is just, you know, failed to find a lot of the time.
Like an Arena Rector.
Like, an Arena Rector might be another option to flashback that, put into play and immediately sacrifice it to find the perfect Planeswalker from your deck. Now, why not play, like, a card in a deck that already ramps, you know?
I mean, this is certainly just... This card certainly just reads, put target Ugin into play.
Or Ugin, yeah.
So, like, the thing that you want to be doing with this, in my brain, is, like, you just want to put, like, Nico Bolas or Ugin into play.
Yeah.
Turn, like, whatever. And, like, is that stronger than anything your opponent's going to be doing in Legacy? I think the answer is no. But in Commander, this is just going to be miserable.
Oh, like, it's going to be awful in Commander.
Oh, my God. Like, your opponent just, like, puts this into play on turn two or three, and then, like, kills it, and they put Ugin into play and wipe everyone's boards. Or they put Nico Bolas God Pharaoh into play and exile everyone's hands. It's just like, oh, why are we playing this game of Magic?
Yeah, this set has a lot of those kinds of moments in it, doesn't it? There's a lot of really powerful stuff for Commander, and it makes me think, like, do we need that? You know, like, do we need to, like, power up the Commander decks even further?
Yeah, I don't think the answer is yes.
I don't think so either, but, you know, it gets those Commander players excited. I don't know, things like this just seem a little egregious, though.
It gets the product off the shelves, man. That's the key.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I could see this in a Nykthoth deck where you play, like, an Ugin or an Karn and some other Planeswalkers, some utility Planeswalkers, and just, like, have access to, like, oh, I need Ugin. Put Ugin into play. Oh, I'm playing against Cullis Eldrazi. Put Karn into play, or Elspeth into play. You know? Oh, I just need some card draw against Miracles. Put Omnixilis into play. You know? Mm-hmm. Like, whatever. Like, I could see a toolbox of Planeswalkers being a thing.
Well, it goes into the, what is it, Traxios, or what's the four cost guy that proliferates?
Oh, Atraxa.
Atraxa, yeah. Atraxa decks, yeah, right.
Thank God they can't get Nico Bolas with that, but yes.
Yeah, I mean, they can get Ugin, they can get Karn, right? So.
Yeah.
That's a big deal. Anyways, in a multiplayer game, a Planeswalker like Karn is not all that great. A Planeswalker like Ugin, I think, is pretty strong, but it's still, you know, you have, like, three other turns that are going to pass in a four-player game for, you know, opportunities to deal with the Planeswalker. And so in one-on-one matches where Karn goes, like, plus four and has, like, 11 Connors on him to start, that feels pretty miserable when you're only one player dealing with him.
Yeah.
But for multiplayer, it's a little bit more manageable.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I didn't plan on talking too much about this set, but I'm seeing all these cool things. I just want to cover one more thing. Arcane Artesian is really cool. Two and a blue for a 0/3 human wizard. It's a rare. No, it's a mythic. I'm sorry. It says two and a blue, tap, target player draws a card and then exiles a card from his or her hand. If a creature card is exiled this way, that player creates a token copy of that card. When it leaves the battlefield, exile all tokens created at the beginning of the next end step. That's pretty awesome for EDH. I don't know if it really is a legacy, has any legacy potential or vintage potential,
no.
But that's a lot of fun. That's a cool design for a card.
I mean, show and tell is just strictly better.
Yeah. So, all right, that's all I want to talk about. Anything else in this set, Daryl?
No, I mean, there's stuff to talk about, but it's, like, not particularly overwhelming as to, like, oh, we should talk about this. It's just kind of like, oh, I like that thing. It's cool.
Yeah.
Like bonus round. Like, cool, yeah. Card, but nothing really to talk about.
Certainly doesn't affect the stuff that we typically cover on this podcast. So,
no, it's not.
I'll be giving this set a shot, but it's not something that's got me particularly excited.
Yep.
Let's see here. Can I ask you a personal question, Daryl?
Sure.
All right. I'm looking at these lands and thinking how cool these basics are. I don't know that I've ever brought this up on the cast before, but I'm curious, Daryl, what is your basic land of choice? And I guess that kind of pertains specifically to a color, but I know you're mostly like a blue player, right? What's your island of choice?
So I waver. Often it depends on if I'm what format I'm playing.
Yeah.
If it's like modern, I prefer to play, or like legacy, I prefer to play revised islands.
Okay.
Like,
yeah.
Because I like to be able to find my whiteboarded lands and like shortcut the searching, so there's not a lot of mental load on like finding the things I'm looking for.
Yeah, and the nostalgic value.
Not even the nostalgia, just a couple of my EDHs have beta basics.
Fancy.
I don't know what possibly why I even did that, but I have fallen in love with the unstable basics. I own none of them, but I'm thinking about just like
they're,
moving.
They're
in.
So weird. I thought for sure I was gonna put them in all of my decks, but after a while of seeing like other people use them, it's like they're just so weird. I don't know if I can get behind them.
Yeah.
And I've got unhinged ones in a lot of my decks.
Although these Battle Bond lands are pretty spicy, and they might be moving to use these.
Yeah, these are pretty cool. As far as sets go with, like, really great basic land art, I really love Urza's Saga all around. Every basic land in that set is beautiful, particularly the islands. They're really cool.
Yeah, I can dig that. I also like the old school Ice Age snow-covered lands.
Yeah, those are cool too.
I just like the art. It's unfortunate that you can't play them in standard because the snow cover has utility.
Yeah.
But I really like the art on those.
Shadowmoor are great too. They're like, particularly the forest in Shadowmoor, they're all these gnarly trees.
Yeah, we digress here.
All right, anyways.
Back on track.
Getting some lands ready for a deck that I'm putting together for my Wednesday event, and I found some Shadowmoor forests that were really cool, and some Urza's Saga planes from the Demonic versus Divine deck, so they've got the new border on them.
Yeah, I just have to get off my butt and buy Teferis, but I don't.
Oh, yeah, yes you do, because there's more Jeskai control going on than ever. And so we're going to transition to that right now. Let's talk about SCG Open in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
All right, first of all, have you seen the results, Daryl?
I have the results in front of me. I opened them before the cast.
Okay, well, all right.
I would not have guessed that humans won the event.
Yep, humans won the event. But here's the funny thing. In second place, Jeskai Control, Jonathan Rossum, who just put out a big article on Jeskai Control that was circulating in a lot of the control communities online last week about why it's the time for Jeskai, basically. And there he is, putting his money where his mouth is.
This is all super standard stuff. He cut in as Kanta for a negate, it looks like. Normally they're running 3 as Kanta.
Yeah, well, sometimes. I've seen a lot of both.
Yeah, he prefers the basic mountain because he's a reasonable human being.
Yeah.
Sideboard is all stuff I kind of expected. Get that damping sphere garbage out of here. Card's terrible.
He cut that is what you're implying by that.
Well, that card is garbage. I saw people playing that and I'm just like, I don't know where you think you're getting away with damping sphere doing damn thing, boys.
All right, here's what I want to talk about, and it directly pertains to Jeskai Control, but I promise that we're not going to spend the whole cast talking about Control in Modern anymore, or this week as well. We did that last week. But
you're going to try and stop me from doing it.
We might get there anyway, but that's not the plan anyway, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Go ahead.
We talked about a couple weeks ago, Daryl, you were pretty down on the whole Modern format, and maybe you still are, I don't know. But we said basically that there were these hyper-aggressive decks that were in the format. It was really hard to play a control deck. And you basically had to make the choice of playing some kind of like unfair, like hyper-aggressive deck, or maybe like, I don't know, something combo-y, right? And we're seeing right now Jeskai Control is kind of taking over in the last weekend and, you know, last weekend or two, I suppose. And I think that's a direct result of humans being played so much. Like, this deck, like, just basically preys on humans, right?
Right. So here we finally made it back to the check and balance.
So we're making a huge shift towards control. But that's the beauty of Modern, though, is my argument, is that we're going to be constantly making these shifts in this format. Because now the control is public enemy number one. Jeskai Control. I think we're going to see a lot of decks that are starting to prey on that, and it's already starting to happen this last weekend. If you look at the Modern Challenge, take a look at the Modern Challenge results. So we're seeing a lot of Tron in the top 8 or in the top, you know, 6 decks or so of this, and I think Tron is going to start to kind of come back now that Control is sort of quote unquote taking over the format. These Jeskai decks are only playing one Field of Ruin. Jonathan Rossum was wise and he put 2 in his deck. But one Field of Ruin.
Jim Davis is the ultimate wise one.
How many does he have?
He has 2 main, 2 side.
2 main and 2 side. Yeah, you really need it, you know? And I think that's the biggest thing. That's the reason I'm not playing Jeskai Control over my Esper Choice, because I've got 4 fields in that deck. And I don't think I'd be comfortable playing less than 2.
You can fit 4 fields in the Jeskai decks. You can structure your mana base the same way. You just have to make this, you know, an active choice that you're willing to lose a game or two to, like, stumbling on mana because you can't cast all of your 1 mana spells.
What would you cut for him? I'd probably cut a Celestial Colonnade.
No, that's how you finish. That's how you finish the game. I would cut the Sulphur Falls.
Yeah.
And probably a Fetch Land. Put it on the 7 fetches.
That's tough, man. This deck is pretty evenly spread between its 3 colors. It is a red splash, more or less, but it's just so heavy on blue symbols, like in the Cryptic Commands and things. Now, Jim Davis only has 2 Cryptic Commands.
Yeah.
Which I think is a testament to the total of 4 Field of Ruins in the side and board.
Yeah.
And the main and board.
Yeah, he made the active choice to play like a negate and a spell snare because he had 4 Field of Ruins. So he's like, well, I can't afford to play a bazillion cryptic commands because I have 4 Field of Ruins.
Yeah, I have to say, I think Jim Davis is actually doing it right with this one. I like the Vendilion Click in the main as well.
Yeah.
This looks like a good plan here. 2 Ancestral Vision in the side. You got to go, you know, go bigger versus the other control decks. They're going to have answers to your search for Azcantos. Draw more cards.
Yeah, I mean, he gives himself also the ability to go up to 27 lands in the control matchup, which is all about not missing your land drops. And then on top of that, you have 4 answers to your opponent's Azcanta.
Yeah.
So in the control mirrors, Jim's put himself in a better position since he has, you know, 2 dispels and a gate, 2 surgicals, the second click, 2 Ancestral Vision, and 2 Field of Ruin. That's kind of what I would see myself bringing in Jim's shoes if I were playing against another control matchup. So you get the board up to 27 lands.
Mm-hmm.
You get to get some of your less good cards out of your deck, like Supreme Verdict and stuff like that. You get to bring in Surgical to beat up on their Colonnades and like their Snapcaster Mages, because you don't really care if they have 4 Cryptic Commands in their deck if they can't kill you.
Right, right.
So, like, take their Snapcasters, you take their Teferis, or you take their Snapcasters and their Colonnades, and you leave them in this like really tricky spot. Then you have Field of Ruin that beats up on Azcanta, so they can't get any card advantage, and you're just really far ahead in the control mirrors, it feels like, from there.
Yeah. How many of these decks look to be like roughly the same 60, if not like 73, 74? You know, they're very, very similar, with the exception of like Jim Davis is now taking, you know, making some changes to the deck. But I think for the most part, we've seen like 5-6 decks in a row that look roughly the same. They look stock. And I think that's the biggest problem with this, is if we continue to play stock control decks, we're going to be able to, we're going to see people exploiting those weaknesses rather quickly.
I was about to say, the problem here is you can't actually have a stock control deck. That's the problem. You can't actually have a stock control deck, because then you don't give yourself the flexibility to introduce new answers, and you don't give yourself the ability to have the element of surprise to play cards that your opponents aren't going to be expecting.
Right. Which is why I really like the Vendilion Click in the main. You know, it's the kind of thing that it's like, it's a pretty aggressive attacker, and it also deals with, you know, basically anything. so to pop that in on turn 3 in the game 1, you're not going to see it coming. Maybe your plan is hedging on a big like bomb that you're dropping out of you know, on your main phase after you've caused the opponent to tap out. Your opponent's going to start to start the clock early with a Vendilion Click and, you know, kind of basically derail your plan for a moment. That's something that you're not going to expect to see out of the first game. However, the clicks are in the sideboard of a lot of these other decks.
Yeah. So, like, here's, you know, kind of coming full circle on the discussion, I'm trying not to talk about control the whole time.
Appealing.
Trying to get you back on the rails. So, for the longest time, control was just a miserable, unplayable pile. And there were a couple reasons for that. One was the lack of a distinct, like, card advantage engine that was actually functional. So, like, they unbanned Jace and everyone thought the sky was falling and there would be 100,000 control decks in the top 8s and, you know, everything was awful. But Jace suffered from the same problem that every other win condition the control decks had, which is you have to tap mana on your main phase, which means you can't interact with your opponent. And you can't put that card into play in modern where your opponents can just kill you.
Right.
And so Jace has that problem still, and so Jace didn't show up. The advent of Teferi gave these control decks the ability to have a 3-mana threat, essentially, where they had a negate or a logic knot up, and they could then interact with their opponent trying to go off or kill one of their creatures or whatever it is that the control deck needed to do to continue to stabilize the game. So Teferi was the first shot in the arm control needed.
Yeah.
And it was the one that kind of pushed it into actual function. But the first thing that control needed was there to be a relevant small creature deck.
Yeah, humans is... I love the existence of humans as a control player.
And humans is that deck. So yeah. Humans is the reason why you see the control decks, and why I think Jim Davis is completely fine going down to 5 main board counterspells. Because guess what? Your counterspells don't beat 4 Cavern of Souls.
Right.
They're good fogs. Your Cryptocranes are great fogs. But, like, Cryptocrane doesn't beat a Camera of Souls. So it's like, you don't really need four of them. You just need a couple to be able to interact with your opponent in a meaningful way if they're playing combo. Because once you find the first one, you basically have a second one because you have four Snapcast Mages.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, you're fine. Like, play a Spell Snare so that if you can catch your opponent with their pants down and they try and play 2-2 drops, you can Spell Snare one of them. You know, but, like, other than that, no big deal. Like, just make your deck in the way that it feels the most functional to you. And so going down those cryptics is a good advent, but the fact that humans exists is the shot in the arm that red-based control decks needed. Because you need there to exist a deck full of X1s and X2s and X3s to make the best red cards good that control can play. Yeah. Electrolyze, Lightning Bolt, Lightning Helix, and Anger of the Gods, if that's the direction you want to go. All of those cards deal 2 and 3 damage. If your threats are all Tarmogoyfs and Luxon Smiters and, you know, big, goofy idiots, red control decks aren't going to be good. And so, like, for a while, when creatures were played, it was. It was Knight of the Reliquary and Luxon Smiter and big, goofy idiots.
Yep.
So Esper's good, but Esper can't ever beat a combo deck because it has no clock. And so that's kind of the rock, paper, scissors we're getting into is now that humans is a deck that's holding down all these stupid combo decks, you can play Jeskai Control because you can have enough spot removal to kill all the humans, plus you have Supreme Verdict to kill all the humans, and you have the red removal that allows you to put up some kind of clock against the unfair decks and the Trons of the world.
Now, I'm not going to just let you go trash talking my Esper deck without a rebuttal here.
Sure. I totally fine with that. Go ahead.
All right. That's the number one concern is that lack of a clock, quote unquote. But I don't see that. I think Lingering Souls is highly underrated in this metagame right now. Now, Jeskai's got Electrolyze against it, right? But aside from that, what are you going to do? Supreme Verdict my tokens? You know?
Right. So here's the thing you're looking at, though.
What?
You think that Lingering Souls is the clock. You can't cast Lingering Souls in a meaningful way against the combo deck. It's not possible. And against humans, they can run over your 1-1s with their superior creatures. And if they're really concerned about you making an army of 1-1s, they can just cast Meddling Mage and name Lingering Souls. Plus, it's a 3-mana spell that gets beat up by Thalia, which, like, it's really hard to get to turn 4 against humans when they put a Thalia in.
That's all fair. I've never lost a game to humans with that deck. I'll say that much.
It's 100% possible that that's the case. You know, your current sample size, you've never lost a game against humans. But, yeah. Like, it doesn't look to be a decent matchup. It looks to be a coin flip at best for the Esper control deck based on what it looks like on paper.
Really?
Because if... Right. So here's the problem you're going to run into.
What's that?
So they put the first Meddling Mage in play, and you can't kill it. Because they name your removal spell. The second Meddling Mage...
What are you going to name? You're playing a Meddling Mage against an Esper control deck. What are you going to name?
Just name Path to Exile.
Okay, you got Fatal Push and Path to Exile in the deck.
Right.
So you got to guess, right?
Right. So you name the one that's most common, which is Path to Exile, because most of them play 4 Path and then, you know, less than 4 Fatal Push.
Okay.
And if your opponent has the Fatal Push, they have it. If not, you put a Phantasmal Image to play and name the other one. And now they can't break out. Unless they draw Supreme Verdict.
Yeah, then you have the Wrath of God.
Right, so you have Wrath of God, but like you have to live to cast Wrath of God, which when they start to pile on with Thalia and Kitesail Freebooter and haste creatures like Aegis Rider, the odds of you getting to Wrath of God look less and less good.
I mean, isn't the same argument like possible for Jeskai Control? You got Lightning Bolt, you got Path to Exile. You know, I see that playing out the same way.
Electrolyze. So there's 4 different removal spells you have to name with your Meddling Mage instead of
1 Electrolyze. Sometimes 2, and it costs 3 mana. So if you're talking to me about how Thalia taxes that and it makes it hard to play, it's the same case for Electrolyze.
Here's what happens. If you're on the play, Electrolyze bails you out of Meddling Mage. Lingering Souls doesn't.
Yeah.
So if you're on the play and they play a turn 2 Meddling Mage, name Path to Exile. You can play a land on turn 3 and Electrolyze their Meddling Mage and open up your paths.
Okay. All right. Well, we're not here to talk about Esper control, but
I'm just pointing out why the matchup is better for Jeskai, and I look at it as, at best, probably 60-40 in Jeskai's favor. At worst, it's probably 45-55 in Human's favor. Yeah. And, you know, that's a lot of that's draw dependent.
Okay, let's go back to the Open here in Minneapolis. I want to talk about two particular finishes. And you know, maybe we just round off the top eight while I'm at it here. Humans in first, Jeskai in second. Jund and Eldrazi Tron in third and fourth. Jeskai Control and Humans in fifth and sixth. Burn and Affinity in seventh and eighth.
Sure.
Now, one finish I want to point out here, first of all, shout out to Carl Johnson. Daryl, do you know Carl?
He's a Madison player.
Yeah, Carl's a friend of mine from Madison who plays at a lot of these events. And Carl is one of those guys that's been, like, basically playing and perfecting his game with a particular deck, and that's Eldrazi Tron. He's the one that finished fourth with Eldrazi Tron.
Yeah.
I remember seeing him in SCG Milwaukee, and he day two'd that. I think he top 16'd it, if not, he definitely top 32'd that event.
Yeah.
This is not a deck that I would consider particularly well-positioned. This is, like, the only Eldrazi Tron finish in the last, like, I don't know, 3 weeks that I've even seen online. I've been actively looking for them because I have the deck assembled. And so Carl is a great example, along with the other finish I want to point out, which is Todd Stevens with Green White Company, who's basically been on that deck forever, despite very few finishes with Green White Company in the last 3 weeks as well. Both players are a testament to the, like, know your deck, know your meta, you know, and you can win games. It doesn't matter what, you know, what is the favorite deck right now. As long as you are comfortable and experienced with your deck, you can make some things happen. And so I think there's a lot to be said about that. I don't think that this is a good place for creature decks in general. Yeah, this is kind of these guys' bread and butter, and they're able to do things like, you know, Todd's got a 15th place finish at this Open, and Carl's got a 4th place finish. That's not easy to do.
Right.
So
yeah. I like Eldrazi Tron. It's not a deck that I look at and go, no. So, like...
What do you mean by that?
Because, like, so it's a deck that has a nut draw that can also answer Athalia uninterrupted.
Uh-huh.
And has these, like, powerful interaction pieces. So turn two Athalia gets brickwalled by Walking Ballista, and you can just eat their entire attack steps in some games. Where, like, if they go, like, turn one champ on the play, and, you know, you play a Tron land, and they play Athalia, pump their champ, attack for two, you can play a Walking Ballista for one and brickwall their whole third turn.
Mm-hmm.
By blocking the champ, shooting the Thalia. And if you Tron up and draw all his dust, you then wipe their board and then put them in a world of hurt. On top of that, you have Chalice of the Void, so you force them to find their caverns. If you put it on one or two, you make them find cavern or they're behind.
Right.
And then your creatures just outclass theirs, especially with Endbringer being a magic card. You can just, like, burn down all their X1s.
Yeah, it's a great card.
And then when you add Vassalus Collar to the mix, it gets real ugly real fast. And then, I mean, if you just look at Carl's sideboard, he, like, knows that Humans is the match he has to beat. Ratchet Bomb, a second Worm Coil, third Dismember, two Warping Whale, which kills the small humans. Yeah. Sky Sovereign.
He's even got Sky Sovereign. I know. He's been playing that
a lot. Alice Dust and Ugin. Like, that's a lot of stuff that you can board in to get, like, Chalice of the Void out of your deck. And, like, you know, in what world do you really want to have, like, Matter Reshaper, maybe? Or Karn? Karn is really bad against humans.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can get all the bad cards out of your deck and be like, oh, yeah? Ugin, figure it out. And they just die.
Yeah. And it's, like, possible that, and I mentioned this earlier, with the control deck's rise, it's possible that, like, Eldrazi Tron is just better, too. Reality Smasher is pretty good against control when it resolves.
Yeah, it is.
You've got the Cavern of Souls in this deck,
yeah,
as is Karn, obviously.
Yeah, you got Thoughtseer. Thoughtseer is very good against control.
Chalice of the Void is great.
So, like, the combination of Chalice of the Void plus Endbringer is also this, like, end game that you can choose not to play Ulamog, and your control opponents still can't beat. So if you Chalice of the Void, they only have two Supreme Verdicts and Teferi. But if they don't have those cards, you put an Endbringer into play. And then you get to draw a card, and then it untaps on your turn, and you get to draw a card, and then it untaps on their turn, and you get to draw a card. And so you just get to keep just racking up this egregious card advantage against these control decks until they draw their Teferi or their Supreme Verdict, and by then you've probably drawn three or four extra cards. So you've drawn the, you know, the second Chalice for two to turn off Snapcaster Mage, or a Thoughtlandseer or Reality Smasher to, like, put the pressure on them.
Right.
And if anything, you can just attack for five and then draw a card, which seems totally fine, too.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's possible that Carl's onto something. Recently, I haven't been all that impressed with Eldrazi decks. In fact, I've played it, and I just was miserable playing it. Once again, you know your deck. You've got much better odds than someone that's just picking up the deck of the week, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm going to give the Green-White Company deck a shot this week as well, actually. And Todd's deck is doing some kind of interesting things now as well. He's got Archangel Avacyn in the main of his Green-White Company deck, which is kind of new technology. I'm a part of the Facebook group for that deck, and I've seen a lot of people kind of get on that train.
There's a second one on the sideboard also.
Second one in the sideboard. Yeah, Worship is now moved to the sideboard. There was some time where these decks were playing Worship in the main. Todd's also got Dromoka's Command in the main deck, which I think is that unbelievably versatile.
That card is real good. So at best, it's like kill your Eidolon of the Great Rebel, counter your Lightning Bolt.
Mm-hmm.
And then at its worst, it's like get a plus one counter. Like, that's literally the worst Dromoka's Command can do. But with, like, Jeskai Control being a thing, you can counter their burn spells and then fight their Snapcasters. You can counter their burn spells and pump your guys.
Yeah.
Like, there's just a lot of flexibility in Dromoka's Command. It's really good at breaking up board stalls in, like, the creature matchups when you have four Knight of the Reliquary, three Tireless Tracker, and a Scavenging Ooze and an Archangel Avacyn. All is, like, these big beaters that you can make, like, 5/5s and 6/6s and then have them fight their biggest creature, take down a Tarmogoyf, and then, like, turn your thing sideways.
Mm-hmm.
You still have the quad Ghost Quarter plan to eat up all your opponent's lands. Like, there's a lot of things going right here in Todd Stevens' deck, if you can put all the pieces together.
Not to mention, even with the 8 mana dorks that this deck plays, Blood Moon is really good against this deck, because you need your fetch lands to be online. So Dromoka's Command is a natural answer to that in the main deck, and that's a pretty big deal.
Yeah.
Out of his side, he's got something interesting, too. Gideon's Intervention is a 4-mana enchantment from Amonkhet.
Yeah, I know what this card is.
Two white. I'm going to read it, though, for our listeners here.
Oh, yeah.
When it enters the battlefield, choose a card name. Your opponents can't cast spells with the chosen name and prevent all damage that would be dealt to you and permits you control by sources with the chosen name. Let's just go through a list of things that might be good against, Daryl. How about, like, all of the Eldrazi?
Yeah.
I like not being able to cast and deal with the cast triggers for, like, Emrakul, for example, or Ulamog, yeah.
It's also just can turn off All Is Dust. You can just cast it and name All Is Dust, and you basically, you know, medley maged it. So where this gets really effective is against decks like Death Shadow,
mm-hmm.
where you nullify their Death Shadows that are in play, like they can't do damage to you.
And they've got and nothing.
And then they just can't cast anything.
Yeah, they've got nothing for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's cool. I've been playing this deck online a lot, and I've come upon the green-red Ponza deck quite a bit, and it's pretty good naming Inferno Titan, which is usually it's only out in a lot of situations. Or Stormbreath Dragon, obviously, is a good target as well.
Better against Inferno Titan, because then your creatures don't die.
Right, yeah. Sometimes my creatures are just so big that they don't care about Inferno Titan. Knight of the Reliquary is the biggest creature in Modern.
Yeah, it's Fight usually me. The biggest creature on the table.
Yes.
But yeah, so like the good thing about the Death Shadow against the Death Shadow deck though is like you name Death Shadow, and then it doesn't matter if they block. If you have three guys to crack in, you're going to get guaranteed damage in because their blocks don't matter because they don't deal damage.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to see more Gideon's Intervention. I think that's kind of a gem under the radar.
It's a touch slow. I still think it comes in against the combo decks, even though it is slow.
Yeah.
Just because you can use it as Nevermore for their, like, combo piece.
Uh-huh.
And then, like, against stuff like Affinity, you just name Etch Champion and you move on through there.
Yeah, I mean, that's great right there, Etch Champion.
Yeah.
That's enough to get me to sign up. Yeah. I've died to that card too many times.
Me too. but I know this card very much from playing 1v1 Commander, because you would cast this card and name their commander. And if their commander was in play, unless it had an ability, it didn't matter. And then when you killed their commander, they could never play their commander again. It was great.
Yeah. All right, let's talk about one more thing before we leave this. And that sure. is the rise of Mardu Pyromancer in the last few weeks. We saw that Mardu Pyromancer win the GP or Open or whatever it was last week. And we're seeing more of it this week. In fact, in ninth place, Cameron Rowland played Mardu Pyromancer. Explain.
There was a fifth place in the side event as well.
How do you even categorize this type of deck? Would you call this like a mid-range deck? Would you call it like an attrition deck?
I don't know what... That's a fantastic question.
Maybe it doesn't matter, but...
So I think this just sits in the mid-range section that, like, Grixis Death Shadow sits in.
Yeah.
Just, like, threats, some Kolaghan's Commands.
It's kind of like a Jund deck, right?
Yeah, it does. It feels kind of like Jund. It's kind of prison-y. Like, you know, your big draw is Blood Moon. So, right. like, we want to play Mardu Pyromancer because Blood Moon is the nuts in this format.
Mm-hmm.
And so... How do we offset how bad the rest of our deck can be some of the time? Well, if only we could cast Brainstorm. And Ben Friedman has written this article, and the argument of Ben Friedman is, Faithless Looting is modern Brainstorm, fight me. But he's right insofar as it gives the red decks that choose to do it. So Brainstorm does two things in Legacy. Two big things. It gives you card selection to help you sculpt your hand for the things that are, you know, for cards that are good and cards that are bad in certain situations and matchups. Unfortunately, versus Faithless Looting, it doesn't cantrip, so it's not as insane as Brainstorm. But the second thing is, Brainstorm lets you set up degenerate garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Brainstorm lets you do stuff like put my Tendrils of Agony on top of my deck, cast my Taxine Throw, break my Lions on Islands, Tendrils of Agony for 22. Or hide my Show and Tell, put my Gristlebrand into play, draw 7 and kill you.
Right.
Like, it sets up the ability to, like, put away, to play these, like, very bad combo pieces in such a way that you can set your deck up to, like, actually be functional.
Yeah.
And Slain does this too. It enables the really broken decks like Dredge and Hollow One and, you know, Gristlebrand, all the dumb stuff. And then for red decks that are interested in that, it sets up your Delve creatures, it gives you some functionality to allow you to be able to set up a situation where the cards that are bad are not in your hand and the cards that are the best out of what you have are there. Plus, it's a long-term sort of advantage piece that nets neutral and gives you a second crack at it later, which is a big deal.
Right. Yeah.
And that's decks are using it as.
You didn't say it gives you 2 mana for Bedlam Reveler, because that's a big deal too.
Yes.
Right? Two mana for Bedlam Reveler.
Yeah, if you discard bad cards, it can give, like, bad spells, it can give you more mana for Bedlam.
In a deck like this, there's always bad spells, though. You know, here's the thing, you're playing all these creature removal spells, or all these discard spells that maybe you don't care about late in the game. Faithless Looting can pitch all of those things. So
most times where you don't want lands, so, like, your lands could be discard fodder. So sure. it's situation dependent, like I was saying.
But I guess my point is, like, when you're playing control decks or control-ish decks where you're doing things, you're playing removal and reactive spells, oftentimes you get stuck with those in your hand. Like, how many times you played, like, a blue-white control deck where you've got, like, the Path to Exiles in your hand versus a deck that just, like, has zero creatures or just you don't care about their creatures? This deck has ways to deal with those things, which is how it's able to pack all of the Dread Boars and all of the Inquisitions and Fatal Pushes and things in its deck. So, I think it's pretty cool. I was kind of inspired by this recently. Someone posted, if Faithless Looting is Brainstorm, Bedlam Reveler is kind of like Treasure Cruise, right? It sort of is the Treasure Cruise in this deck. So I want to give this a shot to go in like a Grixis Pyromancer route with Bedlam Revelers and Faithless Looting. But no. You're going to tell me why it's a bad idea. Go ahead.
I am going to tell you why it's a bad idea. Have you read the card Bedlam Reveler?
Yes.
Okay, clearly you haven't read it very well. So the key here is, what does Bedlam Reveler do best?
It draws you cards when you're hellbent.
Correct. So what never happens to Grixis decks unless they're playing against discard decks?
Well, which Grixis decks are you talking about? Because when I'm playing Grixis as Shadow, I am always damn hellbent. So that's
I don't know how between Opt and Serum Visions, Thought Scour, Kolaghan's Command, Snapcaster Mage.
Oh, come on. That deck's MO is, like, use every card in your hand and, like, race out like a big-ass dude.
Right, but you have all of these cards that continue to keep your hand filled.
Uh-huh.
And because your land count is so low, you naturally and inherently have more cards in your hand than your opponent that are actual relevant Magic cards.
Yeah, I don't know.
So, like, you're going to put yourself in a situation where you draw a Bedlam Reveler and are holding, like, Snapcaster Mage and need to choose between, like, do I want Snapcaster Mage and something that it, you know, that accompanies it, whether that be Kolaghan's Command or whatever, or do I want a Bedlam Reveler? Whereas in this deck, there's only one Magic card that you look at when it's in your hand and you go, do I want this card or do I want a Bedlam Reveler?
Mm-hmm.
And that card is Young Pyromancer. All of the rest of these cards are completely expendable. Lingering Souls, you can flash back. Blood Moon, if you have one in play, or they have basics, it doesn't matter. Fatal Push, Lightning Bolt, all these removal spells, who cares? They're completely expendable to turn them into new Magic cards. Like, so Bedlam Reveler and Young Pyromancer are the only truly unexpendable cards.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's why it works here. Whereas there are very unique and specific cards in something like Grixis Definitive deck. Snapcaster and Death Shadow are very unique and specific. Kolaghan's Command is very unique and very specific and very important for the function of play one threat at a time, like my Delve Guy or my Bedlam Reveler, hold Kolaghan's Command until they kill it, and then Kolaghan's Command them, do something backbreaking, and get my guy back.
Right, yeah, it works great with Bedlam Reveler, which is why I want to play in the same deck.
Right. The problem with that is, like, if you're doing this Grixis style, you're playing one threat at a time, and your threats are either the Delve threats, which power down your Bedlam Reveler.
Uh-huh.
Or...
It'd be Pyromancer, Snapcaster, Bedlam Reveler. You're looking at this very glasses-half-empty, Daryl. You don't need to always assume that you're going to have to discard the Snapcaster Mage. Let's think of it this way. You've got bolts in your hand. You're going to discard the bolts, and you're going to draw the Snapcaster Mage. Then we've got the gas, right?
So here's the problem with that, Corey.
Yeah, what?
We're always looking at the best-case scenario. You have to look at, like, what's your reasonable fail state? Like, what is the middle of the road? And if the middle of the road is, I have, like, two cards in hand. One of them's a Snapcaster Mage. And, like, I don't want to be in a position where I have to pick between Bedlam Reveler and Snapcaster Mage. Like, which one I want. Like, that, you don't want to put yourself in that position where you have your two most powerful cards in hand and you can only have one, or you have to wait to deploy them one after the other.
All right, that's fair. All right, so we're just about out of time here. I want to close out on this modern discussion. Is there anything else you want to touch on in the modern events, plural?
I mean, not really. I'm going to save my other discussion for another time.
Okay. Then in closing here, I just want to issue a little bit of a challenge. And Daryl, you're welcome and encouraged to participate in this as well. But okay. The conversation came up recently between my friend Max and I as we were going to Wednesday Night Magic. Max built a really wacky deck. I'll spoil it for you a little bit here, but I don't want to share the deck list until he's got it perfected, because I think we'll probably have some more information on that soon. It involves Hatching Plans, which is one in a blue for an enchantment. When it dies, you draw three cards. The deck is pretty insane. But that's not what I want to talk about today.
What?
I guess the point being, Max is kind of an outside of the box thinker when it comes to Magic the Gathering. And we got on the topic of liquid metal coating recently. And liquid metal coating is an artifact from Scars of Mirrodin, I believe it is. 2 mana for an artifact. Tap, target permanent, becomes an artifact in addition to its other types until end of turn. Now, the most obvious interaction between liquid metal coating that we can see is liquid metal coating in, like, Ancient Grudge, right? It's great. You can destroy some lands. You can destroy any permanents you want.
Oh, you're thinking small fish here, buddy.
But there's got to be more. Here's the thing that's the issue, though. Liquid metal coating can only target one permanent at a time. So we've got to get around that in some way. And Daryl, you may not want to spoil your plan yet, because the challenge is this. I want you to create a liquid metal coating deck that is viable in modern and takes advantage of destroy target artifact to basically neuter your opponent of their lands entirely using cards Ancient Grudge.
I have to destroy lands? Like,
not necessarily.
Oh,
I mean, okay. Just do some fancy stuff. I want to see a deck built around liquid metal coating. And that goes for you and anyone listening to this podcast. And if you can come up with something, I'll put the deck together. I'll play it at the modern event that we go to on Wednesdays. And we'll certainly cover it on our cast.
I got you, fam.
You got me?
Yeah.
There's got to be something there. Cards and Chains.
We'll end the podcast and I'll tell you all about it.
All right. Well, maybe we'll return to that next week then after we have some results. But if you've got a plan, if you've got a deck list that you want to share, please send it over to us, cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com, and we'll take the best one. Like I said, we'll run it at the modern event, the weekly modern event, and cover it on the podcast.
Perfect.
All right. Thanks for listening.
Later.
See you next week. Card Knock Life is proud to be a part of mtgcast.com. We can be reached at cardknocklifepodcast.com or on Twitter at card_knock_life. We're always looking for more help in generating content for the website. And if you'd be interested in doing so, please email at cardknocklifepodcast@gmail.com.